Fan.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
What in the ham fat is going on with you guys?
The game is over.
This is an old-fashioned ass-kicking right here.
And that's a fact.
Hashtag Faith Radio. Yeah, but...
Get over it!
Don't be so negative!
Hold on to your butts.
No!
Hey, have a seat for a second.
Jamal Williams by his side, out of the shotgun, takes the snap, fires to the end zone, caught, touchdown, Detroit Lions. It is a touchdown for T.J. Hockenson, back center of the end zone. Hockenson's from under center, straight drop. He goes to throw it, the ball is knocked away and bounding about, and it's picked up by the Detroit Lions, and assumedly that is going to be a strip sack and a fumble recovery. Garrett fires over the middle again, and it's caught! For a touchdown, Lions! T.J. Hockenson is murdering us! 23-yard touchdown. That was Brock Wright, the Notre Dame rookie, with his first National Football League touchdown. He's under duress. Kirk gets away from one Lion, but then he can't get away from them all. And that's a sack by Charles Harris, fifth year from Missouri. Fourth down for the Minnesota Vikings. Fourth and 10. Kirk, he flips the ball away as it was coming down. Incomplete pass. Play stop. Incomplete pass. Really, for a third consecutive game, Pete. Cousins, he just looks unsettled. The Vikings' third try at a two-point conversion, up by four. Cousins takes the snap, rolls out to the right, throws to the end zone for 0 for 3.
The Vikings.
Timeouts. They haven't won a game in a year. They haven't won at home in more than a year. Here's Goff. Back to pass. Throws to the end zone. Catch it. Complete. Bashaud Breeland had an opportunity to end the game. The ball was right in both hands, Peter, and he couldn't do it.
Wow. Happy ending. Now what becomes of a broken hearted?
Take care, Polly Wallace.
And here it is with 4 seconds to go in the game. 27-23 Vikings. Jared Goff, three receivers left, one right. Goes out of the shotgun. He takes the snap from Evan Brown. He's going to fire to the end zone. It's caught. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. And these cardiac kiddies have beaten the Minnesota Vikings and won a game for the first time in 364 days. The game-winning touchdown was caught by Amon-Ra St. Brown, and for that young man, his first National Football League touchdown is a memorable one. It beat the Minnesota Vikings 29-27.
Hey, beautiful outside, isn't it? Blue skies for today, 9 to noon, therapeutic Davenport of Love Radio. Ain't no sunshine when you lose to the kiddies. Ain't no sunshine when their O had to go. October 27th, 2019. That's the last time Lions faithful left a home game happy. There have been several things during this 2021 Minnesota Vikings season that have fascinated me. This is the newest. Paying fans in masochistic fashion go to Detroit Lions games, support their favorite team, wear their Honolulu blue, dust off their game-worn Herman Moores, Luther Ellis's, and Darius Slay's, and they pay money to go to these games. And that's the first victory they had seen since October 27, 2019. That's the last time they won a home game with fans in the stands. Pandemic, though. Bigfoot sighting when they beat Washington in November of 2020. When JJ scored late, they went streaming for the exits. The Exodus exits. Because they're used to losing. Justin Tucker from 66. Joseph walks off on the road, but they only had to watch that one on TV. Or listen to our 10 o'clock guest on the radio. The Bears. Happy Thanksgiving. Cairo Santos walks off from 28.
Don't you think if you're so accustomed to losing, programmed to lose, like just wait the final minute out. No need. You're not beating traffic. Just wait and see how it works out. The mass exodus as JJ went in for six. Beautiful.
Might have been 10,000 in the building to witness the Bigfoot sighting. A Detroit Lions win. I ain't kidding you when I say that. I mean, there were sections that had no fans at Ford Field. And then JJ scores and there they go. I mean, they're just streaming out to their cars and out to Greektown and out to get a gyro in Greektown. No matter the injuries and Thielen leaving early, man, that was ridiculous. Holy cow. 0-10-1 into the game. None in a row for Dino. Zero in a row for Mike Yo. And zero in a row for Ole Udoh. 23B. Middle seat, concerns, details. The details get lost when you have the lead against the Detroit Lions with a minute to go. And they have to go 75, sans a timeout. Greg Joseph beat Riley Patterson for our kicking job. Riley's Lions beat Minnesota for the first time since Dalvin tore his ACL. And Charge quit on the season. That's the last time the Kitties beat us. Pittsburgh on a quick turnaround, though. Mike Tomlin with the conundrum of determining what's more difficult, playing Tyson Alualu or saying Tyson Alualu. The details, 0-for-3 on two-point conversions. We rushed three on that final drive, and Jared Goff still got down the field against eight. With guys just running out of bounds and stopping the clock and consternation ensuing and anxiety has been heightened. We should have lost to the Lions twice. Let's rephrase. We very easily could have lost to the Detroit Lions twice. LOL with absolutely all of that. Could have lost to the Lions twice. Blake Lynch played great, but nobody wants to hear that. Justin Jefferson had a career high in yardage and has amassed more receiving yards in four consecutive games than any player in the history of Minnesota Vikings football. All of them.
Hey, what's up, K-Fan? It's 84, man. Y'all stay tuned live for the hottest man in the world, PA, Paul Allen. Yes, sir.
No way the Lions go 75 with no timeouts and win it the same way. I mean, it's like into it, 75, no timeouts. Amon Ross, St. Brown. Quintez Cephas not even playing. Skeletal remains of Herman Moore, nowhere to be found. Now, that ain't going to happen. The same way, there was no chance Sam Darnold was going to go 94 for a TD and a two to force overtime, though. Remember when we were like, damn. We had Cincy. Man, we had Cincy. All those penalties, Dalvin drops it, and we were going to win. We had Arizona. Second play of the game, run Dalvin. First play, set up the play action beautifully, get a blown coverage, and there goes KJ. Then you can't find KJ with the searchlight for 2.5 hours real time. And then all of a sudden he's catching two passes to pave the way for the L. The 37-yard Joseph miss. But look at Arizona, 10-2. Come on, remember? We had Arizona. We were going to beat Arizona. We should have beaten Baltimore after the bar interception, right? Now, Carolina, Green Bay, and Detroit fan bases are like, you should have lost all three of those games, fools, and be 2-11. I ain't kidding you. Loser's lament flips to the other side, and you got Rubes in Carolina, Green Bay, and Detroit being like, hello, can't complain or whine about Arizona and Cincinnati when you could be 2-11. That's the stark reality of 2021 Minnesota Vikings football. A team that beat the Green Bay Packers, the second favorites to win the Super Bowl. And then, 2 weeks later, loses to a team that hasn't won a game in a year and hadn't won a game in front of its fans in more than 2 years. 2021 Minnesota Vikings football. Don't leave home without it.
We don't play the PlayStation like us.
Maybe we win the final five. Maybe we lose the final five. It'll all come out in the wash. It all comes out in the wash. And we only got five to go. The next Thursday night football, though. About a 7:20 boom. Vikings and Steelers. Steelers beat Baltimore. We couldn't beat Baltimore. The pregame at 5:30. And that's this Thursday at FM 100.3 KFAM.
Feels like fitting punishment, given what happened yesterday, that we have to turn around and play an awful Thursday night game.
Same.
At home.
Same.
Just trying to shake off the depression.
Same.
The bitterness, the embarrassment of what transpired less than 24 hours ago, and have to deal with the Thursday night clip. Unbelievable.
The voice of Eric Nordquist, producer of 9 to Noon, and also the master mixer of the impeccable Monday morning montage, threw it back to Jimmy Ruffin, a Motown artist. What becomes of the brokenhearted? They get to play on Thursday night football against the Pittsburgh Steelers and a quarterback who had it leaked, it's his final season, to motivate his locker room. And lo and behold, they're going to rally for Ben and they go out there and beat Lamar. What a crazy world. Fascinating. Thank you, TimberTech. TimberTech.com. What's on deck 9 to noon? It's all courtesy of TimberTech and TimberTech.com. And we welcome you to the Love Covenant at FM 100.3 KFAN.
Programming on the Fan, brought to you in part by our good friends at Quick Trip.
On a Monday morning, beautiful outside and it's soft and warm. We have become the quiet storm with this slow jam.
Baby, with a woman's eyes, I can feel you watching in the night, all alone with me.
Got some Nordo nuggets up your tattered sleeve to share with the old, weary, downtrodden, sad announcer?
I do, PA. Some things to throw past you, to throw by you. Thoughts on some things that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
I do want to start with a couple of positives, if that's okay with you, before we dig into the other stuff.
And good morning.
And good morning. And I want to start with an unbelievable performance from this guy.
C.J. Ham in front of Alexander Madison. K.J. Osborne in motion to the right. He joins J.J. Kirk, back to pass, throws to the end zone, caught, touchdown, he's J.J. And the Minnesota Vikings have taken a 27-23 lead.
It was a conversation with Diggs and Thielen for a few seasons, PA, where the idea was when both of them were in there, both of them high-end route runners, both of them commanding a certain amount of attention that both would then benefit from, right? The idea that if you got to focus on Thielen, Diggs has an opportunity at one-on-ones at various points throughout the game and vice versa. And we've seen that now with Justin Jefferson into his second season. When Thielen goes down early on, I have to admit, sitting on couch, worrisome moment for me in terms of how will Justin Jefferson react to this? How will he be covered for the remainder of the game? And now we know, 14 targets, 182 yards on 11 catches, and that touchdown, the go-ahead, just for a moment, just for a cute minute 50, we had the lead, that go-ahead touchdown yesterday, the unbelievable performance expected and received from number 18, PA.
And he's so open the majority of the time he catches a lot of these passes. Now, the scheming up of Jefferson to get him open has been fantastic. As mentioned in the first segment, he's on a run of four consecutive games with the most receiving yards in the history of Minnesota Vikings football. Yesterday, his career high, buck 80 and change. Young Justin became, that was his 12th 100-yard game, and through two seasons, he has the second most of those in the history of the NFL.
I think he has the second most receiving yards through 2 years in NFL history as well, and he's about a buck 50 from breaking that record, PA.
With the 100-yard piece, he passed Moss and Juju Smith-Schuster, who's not playing for Pittsburgh these days. He's wounded. And so he has 12. OBJ, super special, Odell Beckham Jr. has 15. So J.J. got 4 of 5 games to pass the mercurial OBJ. Silver lining in the negativity covenant, though.
Absolutely. Anthony Barr works out, it sounds like, on the field trying to see if he can go into yesterday's game. We've known that the knee has been an ongoing chronic issue and a hamstring following last week in the game at San Francisco. Enter Mr. Lynch.
6'4", Jared Goff stands tall in the pocket. Back to pass, and he is sacked. It was not Willekes. Instead, it was Blake Lynch. Blake Lynch with a loss of 7 yards. And for Blake Lynch, his first National Football League sack.
Let me just lay it out for you. A couple of sacks from Blake yesterday, impacting plays, affecting Goff. And the absence of Barr, was it leveled out by what looked like a fairly promising performance from Mr. Lynch?
Hey, no doubt. And with Anthony, it seemed to be very much a 50-50 equation. He was on the trip, working out right in front of me at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Motown time, when I was doing Vikings Football Sunday with main man Muss and pregame preach. And he didn't go. Now, Kendricks, Barr, and Patrick Peterson. You know, I would bet all three of those guys play Thursday evening. Now, Patrick Peterson, he has the clutch gene. He's seen a lot and doesn't fear much. Not everybody has that gene.
Cam Dantzler, what are you doing?
I mean, too bad for Cam, because he had his first interception of the season. He had a couple of plays where he just covered up the receiver beautifully, made one wonderful open field tackles. You know, but like DK Metcalf last year, man, it's just some people get all flop sweaty and nervous and their mind doesn't work the right way. And You know, that's, I have no idea what Cam was doing on that final play with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Cam Dantzler, what are you doing? I mean, he's lollygagging down the field a little bit, and then all of a sudden he just gets lost. Patrick Peterson would not have gotten lost. He'll play on Thursday.
How about this, PA? I want to take you back to the first half. Final 2 minutes of the game. It's fourth down.
Fourth down for the Minnesota Vikings. Fourth and 10. 35 seconds to go in the first half from the Lions 42. Three receivers make it four off to the left. Now Madison motions to the backfield, picks up a blitz. Kirk, he flips the ball away as it was going down. Incomplete pass. Play stop.
Oh.
Incomplete pass. Jerry Jacobs picked it up, thinking he was going to circumnavigate his way to a touchdown. But nevertheless, really for a third consecutive game, Pete, Cousins, he just looks unsettled.
And I'll stop it there. PA, the thing with me, for me on this issue here, 32 seconds left, Lions have a timeout. Mm-hmm. You're down 17-3. The idea of being aggressive in that moment, we need to get something. We need to jumpstart this thing. Lions are going to get the ball to start the third quarter. Let's just not punt it away. But that, in that circumstance, was the right play, in my opinion, to punt it, pin them back. They'll probably kneel on it, go to the break. What happens in a season in which 11 of 12 games have been decided by less than two possessions, one possession games? They take it down, kick a field goal, and they're up 20-6.
Mm-hmm.
The decision to go for it on fourth and 10 there, in, I think it was at the 40 or 41 yard line of Detroit, kind of irked me a bit, PA.
Yeah, not me. And because it had been so lackluster and the vibe was so low key and non-existent, it's clear the coaching staff was doing something to pump up the kids, and it didn't work. And those are part of the details that get you down 20-6, you know. But nevertheless, there you are at the end of the game with the lead, and then they're throwing into the end zone, and Cam Dantzler's freaking out. Now, you know, the 2-point conversions in the hindsight is 20-20 bit, and the revisionist history bit. There's a lot of fraudulence popping around with that, because the situations where the Vikings went for two, generally speaking, at least two of them, if you want to follow the percentage chart, it absolutely was the right decision. And I know if they kick those extra points, they win the game. However, if they don't go for two in those moments, the frauds are going to rip the decision. But then when they do go for two and it's terrible and they don't get it time and time again, Davey, well, then the revisionists are going to look back and say, yeah, but we should have taken those extra points, man. People are just frustrated.
Well, and I'm all about them going for two. Now, I will say that it feels like at times that there's a disjointed aspect of it, where we've seen now 4 2-point conversion attempts in the last two games. We've only seen 8 all season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's almost like, it feels to me like Zimmer's saying, you guys want me to go for two? I'm going to go for two. I'm going to show you guys that we're going to go for two. And then it doesn't, there's almost like a shooting from the hip vibe in terms of the decision making in some of those instances. That's how I feel as an outsider that watches all of these games. The thing for me, though, what about the plays? Like missing Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen, a red zone target. Adam Thielen, perfection inside the 20 for the most part. The choices of how they operated those 2-point conversion plays.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against people questioning if there was a better option, if there was a better play. The head coach conceded as much in his post-game press conference that they weren't the best, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
So how those plays are executed, I think, is probably drawing more of the ire, although it's coming out in different ways. If we had kicked those extra points, then we'd probably be talking about overtime instead of an L.
The 2-point conversions this year have been as bad as I've seen since calling Vikings games. Comparatively speaking, last year, the 2-point game was the best I had seen calling Minnesota Vikings games. You know, when I believe when they went for their first 2-point conversion, I think there was 20 minutes left in the game. So you're down 5 points and you got like 20-21 minutes left in the game. A 5 clearly gets you to a 3 if you get the 2. And if not, it gets you to a 4, which per the percentage chart is same as a 5. Yeah, I just I ain't got any time for that. I don't. I'm not going to sit here and do rudimentary math.
No, I got
you, people
though.
Who would see a team down 5. You don't go for the 2, you need to be fired. You do go for the 2, you need to be fired. It's just fraudulent.
Right, and it's reaction to the result. It's not reaction, even in this particular case, to the theory behind it. Now, speaking of theory, the idea of managing the clock. This one got me a bit. And end of the game, PA.
Oh, end of the game, I mean, yeah.
I'm going to take you to third and one just before the two-minute warning. Inside of 3 right. minutes, let's listen.
I mean, they had that fourth and short, and they took a timeout there. Like you or Ben said, gave the Vikings an opportunity to get new personnel on the field. They only have one timeout remaining.
They had us in a fourth and one with James Lynch at nose tackle. Nothing against James Lynch, but you want to have Michael Pearson there. That gave us time to put some of those bigger bodies back in the middle of our defense.
Cousins on third down out of the shotgun. He'll give it to Alexander Mattison up the middle to the 10 to first down. Yes, Alexander. He gets to the 8-yard line. So it'll be a run of 3 when they needed 2, and the clock continues to run.
Here's the problem, PA. On third and one, the clock continued to run, but there was 2:43. remaining in the game when they blew that whistle. Ended up measuring, get the first down, clock continues to run. They were forced to call another play, run another play before the two-minute warning, PA. That third down snap was taken with 10 seconds remaining on the play clock.
That's no good.
You run that thing down to 2, make sure, you verify that you have less than 2 minutes and 40 seconds when you snap that freaking ball.
Yeah.
And instead of running a second down play after the 2-minute warning, you're first and goal. They burn their final timeout, and regardless of what happens, you want them to score a touchdown, you want them to kneel on it twice and kick a field goal to go up by 1.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happens, the Lions are getting the ball back with less than 30 seconds remaining in the game.
Yeah.
As it was, they did not do that, PA. And that potentially is a game-changing moment. Not potentially, it is a game-changing moment, leading to the ability of 14 plays, 75 yards, knife through butter. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Cam Dantzler, what are you doing?
That that highlight that you played, walking up to the Madison first down inside the 10, right before that, we were discussing exactly what you just said, is that you can run one play and get it down to the two-minute warning or make them use their final timeout. And then you can go to taking knees and get that thing down to below a minute. Now, that's assuming you make the field goal. And then you take a one-point lead. They have less time and still the same situation with the timeouts. And who knows how long they have to go. It might be 75 yards, but they can have a minute 5. And that extra 30, 25-ish seconds, whatever it would be, well, makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and I'm kind of out of Nordo's nuggets from the game. That's what frustrated me. I had some two-point conversion stuff, but we kind of touched on that. 1 of 7 this year on two-point conversions. Lieber threw this stat out. You heard it during the broadcast. It's alarming. 2-26-1. 2 wins, 26 losses, and 1 tie. Kirk Cousins led purple and gold when trailing into the fourth quarter. For me, you know, looking at...
Is that his career or with the Vikings?
I thought that was with the Vikings.
Is it?
But I gotta make sure of that, I guess. But I don't like taking a 10,000-foot view on careers or tenures with teams. 2021 has provided enough for us to chew on in itself. And it's once again, another one-score game where afterwards we are drilling down into details, into seconds, into minutia, into gray area, philosophical decision-making, clock management, and things that are leading to losses. A 5-7 team, as you put it last segment, that could be 2-11. They could be 9-3, PA.
There ain't no doubt about that, and I'm very curious to see what the fan base has to say. Thus, the next segment, we are going to take phone calls at 800-320-5326 or 651-989-5326. It's a loss to the winless Lions, their first win in a year, and their first Bigfoot sighting with fans actually in the building in more than 2 years. Come on in. 800-320-5326, 651-989-5326. Love Covenant, KFAM.
Time now for the Vikings Report on The Fan, presented by Pilot Games. Vikings assistant coach Paul Gunther joins PA after this from Pilot Games.
Man, Cam Dantzler was playing for the most part so well, Paul Gunther, before the game winner. What happened at the end?
Yeah, we were in a call where you gotta defend the goal line, you know, and he got a little bit deep and it was a zone coverage. We had dropped eight guys back, and he got a little bit deep. The guy came up, ran on his toes across the goal line, and they stuck the ball right inside of him. But really, the thing that we kind of misplayed a little bit, I think, you know, we had a minute 50 left, no timeouts. There's a couple plays there where we lost leverage and let them get out of bounds. It's a situation where you tackle them in bounds, they got to come out and spike the ball, or get on the ball, and run the next play, and it's unfortunate. But he just misplayed the last one.
Very well explained. How about Blake Lynch with those two sacks, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery? You know, it seems like he might have a chance despite his size.
Yeah, he played a really good game. You know, obviously Barr didn't play, Kendricks didn't play. He did not get a lot of reps during the course of the week, so to put him in there, because we weren't sure with Anthony, with his situation, he did a really nice job stepping up, and you know, hopefully he keeps playing good.
Even with Pierce and Tomlinson back in the mix, they still ran a bit on you guys. What why was that?
Yeah, they're a running team. You know, it takes all 11 guys to stop the run. It's not so much just the defensive tackles. Some of the perimeter runs where they crack and replace, the corner's got to fill in the run game, or the safety's got to fill in the run game. So it takes all 11 guys.
Was that about the most sullen, worst atmosphere for a football game maybe you've ever seen in your coaching career?
Pretty much, other than the COVID, the first couple games of COVID, we didn't know what to expect. You know, we knew, you know, coming off Thanksgiving Day game, which is pretty much the Super Bowl up there in Detroit. And then, you know, Michigan played the day before in the Big Ten championship game, that the crowd was going to be sparse. So, we had to bring our own energy, and, we understood that.
KFAN.
One 1-800-320-5326 651-9995-326. Good morning, Troy. How have you been?
I've been pretty good. How you doing, Pierre?
Pretty well. Happy holidays to you, your wife, and your family. Haven't seen you in a while. Hope to see you soon. We got Buffalo Wild Wings and the Feast this Friday at Lakeville. Then after that, not sure where we are. Could be Roseville, but stop by, say hello.
I plan on doing that. I got a couple things I want to get to, and these are my opinions. I feel like in my heart of heart, some of these people that were ruled out and didn't play Sunday would have played if this was a playoff game. But with the short week and Pittsburgh on the way, they didn't play. I don't know if it was looking ahead, focusing on the game Sunday. I really feel like even with the personnel that we had, with everybody missing, we should have won that game.
Okay,
we
let me get it done. Troy, your football opinion is greatly respected in the Love Covenant. Without knowing those individuals or the training staff, what would lead you to say that?
It's just a gut feeling. I feel like if that was a playoff game, some of these guys would have played. And I feel like because we played Detroit, who hasn't won a game, and with the talent we have, that I think they felt like they could still win the game without some of these people playing. I'm not saying they were 100%, but
I see what you're saying. So you're saying with now, I don't believe Kendricks. Yeah, you know, the Kendricks thing popped up late, and ain't no way that I'm playing Eric Kendricks. Peterson couldn't play the COVID bit. Darrisaw couldn't play, from what I understand. But what you're saying is, okay, nothing you can do about Pat, but you can sit Eric, sit Anthony, Jack with the makeshift Minnesota Moving Company, put Ole Udo over at left tackle, and then go Bradbury, resurgent at center, Mason Cole at guard, and we can get away with all of that in this game. That's what you're saying, right?
That's what I'm saying, and yeah. I just didn't understand the Udo for Rashad Hill move. I didn't understand that because Udo hadn't started the game at tackle. Also, our defense has given up 27-plus points in 7 games this year. Ooh. A lot of these games are coming down to our defense making a stop. Now, we know the offense hasn't been consistent all year. The team as a whole hasn't been consistent all year. But when I think about these games and this record for Kirk, Kirk finds a way at the end, whether he started the game slow or not. He finds a way at the end to get us ahead, and sometimes it's up to that defense. You got to make a stop. We've been seeing this since 2014 with this regime, back to the Buffalo game. You know, like, we've been seeing this so many times, and at some point, you know, it's an accountability thing with me, so I'm not backing off of what I said to you early in the year about this regime. I just feel like we've seen this too many times. It kind of is what it is at this point, and it's time to move forward. That's the way I feel.
Fairly State, Detroit. Have a good day. John in West Virginia. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing well. You?
Good, good, good. Hey, Paul, you guys do a great job. I just want to start out by saying that. Thanks a lot, you guys. I listen to you guys all the time. I don't have the TV. I'm in West Virginia, so I listen to you on the radio every Sunday. I want to talk a minute, Paul, if I could, about the X's and O's when you had Zimmer. And I think it was a couple Wednesdays ago, you had asked a question. I don't have it right in front of me, but he said Sundays are not fun. Okay, I'm a business owner, and I've had employees, and when you get to a point where what you're doing is no longer fun, I think you need to find something else to do, because you're not in it. If it's not fun and challenging should be fun in the NFL. The more you're challenged, the more fun it should be, and that's just the way it is. Okay, and if we were, say, Paul, if we were hypothetically to get into the postseason, do we have the coaching staff to take us far enough and deep into the playoffs? No, we don't. So do we fold up and start playing for a first or a draft pick in the top 10, or do we go forward and try to get a draft pick in the top 20?
Well, two year, I'm not going to speculate on the second part is too hypothetical for me. I can't answer that. But the first part, and I don't exactly remember what the context was for Mike to say Sundays aren't fun. But I mean, Mike and I joke around so much on that show about these meat grinders. You know, it's Zimmer is, I can't explain what is fun and what is not fun to Zimmer, but coaching these games and getting ready for these games, I mean, it's his life. So there's some fun that goes into it. But I think when there's so much pressure involved in these games for the totality of the games, I'm going to guess that's what he's saying is that, you know, their fun is not the right way to describe it. It's to say he's not having fun is ridiculous. I mean, of course he is.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's the context that I think that matters there. I appreciate you, man. Thanks for the phone call.
Yep.
Dominic St. Paul. Hello.
Hey, how's it going? I just have a quick little opinion about Mike Zimmer. I know it's probably unpopular after a bad loss such as yesterday, but I just want to show a little support for him. I'm a fan of him. I'm not afraid to say it. I think this team plays for him. You can see that game in and game out. And with these people coming back, such as Richardson and some other players that kind of go make a few stops somewhere else and come back. I like him, and I hope he stays.
Thank you, Dominic. Now, I mean, it's a difficult conversation because it is so multi-layered, and the majority of it is what you and we can't see. I'm not going to run through the two-segment dichotomy of truly what goes into an in-season firing of a coach and the hashtags, because that's what it is. It's somebody pounding on a keyboard or calling a radio show, and then they're done, and then they move on to whatever else. But that's not the reality of the existence of the individual or the totality of the situation, because people would be foolish to look at everything that's happened this year, and a lot has happened, and say the head coach and or the coaching staff really had nothing to do with it. That it is fact. If Cam Dantzler and Xavier Woods, who's a little too exonerated in this whole thing for my liking, I mean, X, he had a chance too. I mean, When Goff unfurls the pass, if he jumps right to the spot, then he's there too. But mostly Cam Dantzler is, if he makes that play, then the game is over. And while the details do matter, they are not as hyper magnified as they are after a loss to the Lions and or anybody. So through all of that, when it comes down to culpability in the ultimate team game, you have mistakes and or success stories during the course of these 3-hour dramas. But the executive producer and the leader is the head coach. So fairly, a lot of it should come back to him when the offense goes incredibly well, even though he's identified with the defense. He gets credit for that too. He gets credit for Blake Lynch and 2 sacks, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery. On the other side, when time management is bungled, when you're going Chris Weber on it and calling back-to-back timeouts, and things are mismanaged, that also is part that also falls under the pay grade for the head coach of a football team. So then the next layer of it would be the owners and management that is in a decision-making capacity, what they think of the work, what they think of the body of the work, and what they think of the person. So all of that meshes together off what Dominic said. I mean, he's like, I like Zimmer. He's done a good job of the defense. I hope he stays. On the other side, you're going to get people. He's been here 8 years. The general manager's been here a decade and a half, and I want to change. And even if I agree or disagree with that, the bottom line is you have a right to that opinion. And when you don't have a right to that opinion, then the age of rage has just beaten somebody down so badly that your time is not worth giving them in the first place. BJ.
Hello, yep.
Hi, BJ.
Hi.
You're on the radio, hey. My buddy.
Hey, Paul. First of all, I wanted to say that I'm a big fan of yours, so you're doing a great job. I had a couple of nuggets from yesterday's game. I wanted to ask your opinion. First of all, in the last drive when Detroit went down and scored on us, they had a minute and 20 seconds and change. We had a couple of timeouts left. We never pressured the quarterback. Like, not, we pressured him once and he almost threw an interception. So why not the coach took a timeout, reset his defense and, like, tried to pressure him, like, once or twice more? That's one thing. And second thing, everybody's like, okay, Kirk Cousins had a really great game. But really, first half, we were down 20-6. He overthrew KJ Osborne in the red zone. So what's that all about? Like, he looks so inconsistent at times. So what's all that about?
Thank you, VJ, and I appreciate the nice words. There was a clip that Nordo played somewhere within the first hour of the show. And what I said during the game calls was what I'm going to say right now is I know Kirk inside and out with his performances, man. And he's a little off right now. I thought he was off in the Green Bay game. I thought he was off for about half of the Green Bay game, but he pushed through and made some cold-blooded plays. In the game at San Francisco, it is as skittish or fractious or nerve-wracking as I've seen him all year. And yesterday, what impressed me about Cousins is the same thing was transpiring, but he pushed through it and made some really, really good plays. So he's not as sharp as he was earlier in the season, but he's still good enough to get you down the field against pretty much any team and win the game. So with Cousins, it has been a little more in and out than we've seen early in the season. But, you know, this is ain't nobody assaulting or verbally assaulting Justin Jefferson, who's terrific, and he's a wonderful person. If I see JJ tap his chest 1, 2, or 3 times during a game again, indicating he ran the wrong route, then I might have to ask somebody why he's doing it. Because I didn't see it at all last year. I didn't see it at all early in the season. But over about the last month and a half, Jefferson has like tapped his chest, my bad. And yesterday, on a slant, he broke that slant off way too early, and the Vikings got lucky. It wasn't a pick six the other way. So that's playing into it, too. So now you connect the dots of the gridiron gospel. if Cousins is playing completely fast, as he has the majority of the season, that means he knows his players are running to the right spots. When the players stop running to the right spots, the quarterback starts second-guessing the who, what, where, when, and why. And that leads to inconsistency. We'll be right back.